Welcome to the Crypto 101 podcast, presented by Gemini, your bridge to the future of money.
All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Crypto 101 podcast. I hope you're having a fantastic morning, noon, or night, wherever you are in the world. You are certainly in the right place. Brendan and I are joined by an incredible guest, a heavy hitter, CEO of a publicly listed company on the Toronto Stock Exchange. We're joined by Patrick Woods, CEO of DelphX. Patrick, thank you for joining me and Brendan. And how the heck are you doing?
Doing great, guys. Doing great. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
Yeah, funny. We're actually a publicly traded company in Canada, but we're based out of New York. But that's a whole other story, and I don't want to go in there. It'll bore everybody. So, but yeah, there's some history there.
I love it.
Yeah.
And Brendan, how are you doing? Not in New York, not in Canada, but in quite the opposite climate in Florida.
I know, coming in from sunny, blazing hot hurricane season Florida over here. But no, you know, I'm doing good. I'm doing great.
Enjoying the volatility, my friend.
Yeah, that's for sure, dude. It's a very tradable market. The audience knows me. I love trading. I love making the plays. The volatility is my best friend sometimes. But
oh man, well, Patrick, we're really excited to have you on, a kind of an expert in structured credit, and all things Wall Street. But we want to just dive in a little bit into your background first before coming into crypto, before getting fully crypto pilled. Tell us what you were doing beforehand and what pulled you into the market.
Yeah, so that's so 30 years ago, I came into capital markets. I've pretty much worn every hat you can, guys. Investment banker. I was a stockbroker at one point, salesman, you name it. So and I've been at very large firms. But then I left to put up my own shingle, I guess, about maybe 13, 14 years ago. And around that time is when crypto kind of started to really kind of, it was becoming something. And so I was based in Toronto. The guys at Ledger Labs who developed Ethereum were based up there. So I connected with a lot of folks in the space through that kind of, you know, once again, that small kind of close connection. And I guess it was in 2012, I went to the first Consensus conference out in New York, and met, you know, once again, a lot of folks who today are running some of the largest companies in crypto. And for me, to be quite frank, guys, you know, the allure of crypto was really more on the blockchain side. I really liked Ethereum. I thought smart contracts was a brilliant thing. Delaware, you know, the governor of Delaware was actually at that conference, which was, you know, once again, it was only about 200 people at the conference back then. It was really small. But, you know, I loved what he was doing, you know, using smart contracts through their, you know, their city infrastructure and ecosystem. But then by virtue of running my merchant bank advisory, we took a few companies in crypto and in blockchain public. Now, one of them, actually, funny enough, happened to be this company, DelphX. And DelphX is a company that was originally, you know, kind of rolled out in 2018. The original management blew the company up. And then I reluctantly stepped into where the CEO had a few years ago. And what led us to crypto, actually, Bryce, am I kind of skipping ahead a little bit too much?
No, this is great. We love the full story.
But what led me to crypto again was the fact that we were approached early in the summer this year because we have kind of our stock price is literally nothing. We've done no marketing, and we've really been focused on our mission. And our mission at hand has been developing a new structured product for the credit markets. So we noticed that there was a, you know, kind of a gap in the credit default swap market, because my background is pretty heavy in fixed income, as is most of our, you know, guys in the company. And anyway, we developed a really cool product. We noticed there were weaknesses in credit default swaps, and we developed a really, you know, great structured product that addresses pain points around downgrade risks. So if you're an insurance company, you own BBB bonds, if they're downgraded to BB, there's no real product out there that covers you. So we created these securities, which essentially provide that kind of capital buffer or that mitigation of risk. And funny enough, as I was saying at the beginning of the summer, we were approached by a few guys in New York, and they said, look, why don't we use your little shell company essentially to, you know, basically do a Bitcoin treasury. And And you know, SharpLink was doing their thing at the time. I mean, obviously MicroStrategy has been around forever, but everyone was doing, you know, crypto strat, well, DATs, right? And yeah. So
they still are. Really, I saw a new one recently for Solana, look, 1.6 billion or something.
I mean, it's a really cool business. And I think the model is interesting. But we wanted to do something a little bit differently, because, you know, how do you differentiate yourself? And the one thing that we found out was all of these guys going public, the Solana guys, the Ethereum guys, they're all searching for alpha. And no one out there is actively hedging their portfolio in a securitized way. And when I mean securitized, like, I'm talking about a fully collateralized, transparent way. One that, you know, when the bottom falls out, you're not worrying about a counterparty. Like, you know, you don't need to worry if FTX is your counterparty in our structure. And so what we designed is we took our original infrastructure and we built out our product line, expanded it, so to speak, to crypto. And we think what we've got now is a product which provides a hedging cushion in bad markets. So, you know, we think 15% below market is a good place to start on the hedge and cover you all the way down. But what makes this unique, and, you know, Brendan, you were talking about trading crypto. I bet you're using a lot of derivatives, OTC options and things like that. Yeah. Those are fine. But when you're talking about a large crypto treasury, you need to have the assurances that, you know, if there's gut-wrenching volatility like in 2022 or 2018, you need to know that. And I think it's important. I think it's an amazing selling feature, too, because there's a lot of people looking to get into the space who aren't, because they don't want to have the 2018, 2022 moves of, you know, down 74, down 64. They can stomach 15%, but, you know, they don't want to do that. So what this in effect does is, it, unlike OTC options and other strategies out there, you're not worrying about your counterparty. So when you're basically a crypto treasury or a DAT or even a fund, but anyone who manages, let's say, 100 million of Bitcoin, let's say, you would pay a premium to put on this protection. It's going to cannibalize a little bit of your CAGR on an annual basis, because this is an ongoing strategy that you continuously want to do every year. But you're going to pay a premium, almost like buying a put option. But on the other side, Brendan, the option seller, they're putting up collateral, which actually sits in a treasury bill, or like 3-month treasury bills. And U.S. Bank is our custodian. They run everything as far as all the cash flows, et cetera. It's really a traditional finance product that we've married to a decentralized finance product, crypto. And we think we're the first guys out there who have done it, because, you know, let's face it, Wall Street's asleep. They haven't invented. I mean, last time Wall Street invented something new was, I don't know, about 20, 30 years ago. So that's kind of given us, you know, the small little tiny company, you know, window and the, you know, the ability to actually go out there and innovate new products and disrupt a bit. So that's kind of where we're at as far as, you know, that's what we're doing. I don't think we're really a product. I think we're more of a service. And the service we provide, obviously, is being the issuer of these new securities. And obviously, we act as the placement agent for our broker dealer, all that other kind of good stuff. So it's pretty cool. We're pretty excited about it.
All right, Crypt Nation fam, let's pause for 1 second and talk about an important issue going on right now, and that's SIM swap attacks. SIM swap attacks are becoming a serious threat, especially in crypto. If someone gets control of your phone number, they can access your bank accounts, your exchanges, emails, and even your private messages. That's why the Crypto 101 podcast is partnered with Afani. It's America's most secure mobile service, offering a guaranteed protection against SIM swaps with added privacy. Since launching, not one single Afani user has ever been SIM swapped. And for some reason, if it ever does happen, you're backed by up to $5 million in insurance against financial losses. This is literally why we chose to partner with them. It is our favorite thing about Afani is the insurance policy of up to $5 million if it does happen to you. Afani runs on either AT&T or the Verizon network, and you get to choose which one. There are no contracts, and it is super easy and seamless to sign up. You also get a 60-day money-back guarantee, so there's zero risk in trying it out. Right now, for our listeners, you get $99 off when you sign up at afani.com/crypto101. That's afani.com/crypto101, or check the show notes below for a link. These days, your phone number is probably more valuable than your social security number. So make sure it's protected with Afani. All right, Crypt Nation fam, are you interested in effortlessly growing your Bitcoin portfolio? Because I know I am. The Bitcoin credit card by Gemini earns you Bitcoin back on every purchase. Use it like any credit card. You buy lunch, you get gas,
any of your weekly grocery expenses, and you'll earn up to 4% back instantly in Bitcoin or one of over 50 other cryptos straight into your account. All that with no annual fee. And right now, you can grab $200 of Bitcoin. That's right, a $200 Bitcoin welcome bonus with the Gemini credit card. It is the easiest way to start building your Bitcoin stack. Go to Gemini.com/card to learn more. Terms apply. See the link in the description for more information regarding rates and fees.
If you have been considering futures trading, now might be the time to take a closer look. The futures market has seen increased activity recently, and Plus 500 Futures offers a straightforward entry point. The platform provides access to major instruments, including the S&P 500, NASDAQ, Bitcoin, natural gas, and other key markets across equity indices like energy, metals, forex, and crypto. Their interface is designed for accessibility. You can monitor and execute trades from your phone with a $100 minimum deposit. Once your account is open, potential trades can be executed in two clicks. For those who prefer to practice first, Plus 500 offers an unlimited demo account with full charting and analytical tools. No risk involved while you familiarize yourself with the platform. The company has been operating in the trading space for over 20 years. Download the Plus 500 app today. Trading in futures involves a risk of loss and is not suitable for everyone. Not all applicants will qualify.
I'm no tech genius, but I knew if I wanted my business to crush it, I needed a website now. Thankfully, Bluehost made it easy. I customized, optimized, and monetized everything exactly how I wanted with AI. In minutes, my site was up. I couldn't believe it. The search engine tools even helped me get more site visitors. Whatever your passion project is, you can set it up with Bluehost. With their 30-day money-back guarantee, what do you got to lose? Head to Bluehost.com. That's Bluehost.com to start now.
It's super fascinating. And I just want to make sure I got this right. And so for folks who are listening, you know, this is almost like, you know, if you're MicroStrategy or if you're one of these large companies that hold a lot of Bitcoin or crypto, you could kind of come to a company like DelphX or pretty much only DelphX, and you could get this insurance, this disaster insurance, if you will, on your crypto, and you could handle all the structured credit and stuff for them so that they don't have to roll their own, you know, out of the money put buying, you know, monthly strategy. Is that right?
Yeah. So we don't actually make any decisions on that front as far as, you know, how much protection they want, you know, what levels they want to set it at. That's up to them, mm-hmm. but that's a negotiating factor that they will negotiate with the other side. The other side are, you know, two very large hedge funds who want to basically offer the protection in return for that premium going forward. We simply act as a broker dealer, placement agent in the middle. We can help facilitate the transaction, of course. And these are issued as private placement securities. So pretty standard stuff. Like, you know, you're talking subdocs, an offering memorandum, all those other kind of, you know, once again, it's under 482 in the United States. It's a really easy program and pretty much everyone knows about it. Yeah, which also makes it a very kind of distinct product too, because we're not a derivative. Because we're fully collateralized, because the collateral is held in a treasury bond, you know, we're technically, like I said, a 482 security, and we fall under that program banner. So that is also somewhat interesting because if you're an insurance company or pension fund, you know, you're limited in some cases to derivative exposure, et cetera. Here, you know, once again, you're building in a hedge that's not a derivative. It's actually a real security. And that's how it's viewed. So,
and with the cost of Bitcoin so high, the implied volatility typically being pretty high because it's so volatile. Like, you know, I think a 15% move in Bitcoin is pretty regular. I would say in crypto, I would think at least once or twice a year, whether it's a bull market or a bear market, we're gonna have a 15% drawdown. So, does that mean that like buying 15% out of the money protection is more expensive and you know, how, you know, you said it drags on compound annual growth rate over the long term. Are there any sort of like ranges that you could kind of give us on like much that drags on return?
Yeah. So, Bryce, that's a great question. So in the last 10 years, the CAGR on Bitcoin has been 84%. Had you put this protection on over that 10 year period, your CAGR would have come down to 69%. So,
but you would have been able to sleep a lot better too.
Well, you know what? Once again, you're avoiding those gut-wrenching volatility, you know, moments like 2018 and 2022. Now you're mitigating.
Yeah.
Like you're not avoiding them. You're still going to get spanked 15%, but you know, you're not down 84 or, you know, 64. Sorry, I think it was like 74 and 64, but anyway, it was a lot. It was a lot. And if you're, you know, if you're a conservative investor and you look at this, like Michael Saylor is an example, he thinks that Bitcoin is, you know, it's the reason for it is preservation of capital. Well, that's a good thing to say, but wait a minute, you're not preserving capital if you're not hedging. And, you know, once again, if you're leveraging and doing all those other things, it's not really the truth, is it? So our view is that Bitcoin is basically dictated by supply demand fundamentals. And obviously a friendly administration right now as well. And basically a more robust adoption. But, at the same time, if you're thinking preservation of capital, and you're thinking about the 95% of people who want to be in crypto who probably aren't because they're worried about preservation of capital, I think, you know, we have a tool that, you know, if it's marketed and used properly, then people will really benefit from it.
Yeah. And something that you said really stood out to me is the fact that this is meant for those bigger treasury companies, and we're seeing more and more of them. And I think for the average investor or person, you can hedge against your own normal size portfolio pretty easily, right? If you're extremely long, you know, maybe you buy a put to offset some of the risks. But if we're talking about a company or any of these treasury companies doing that, it's a lot harder, not to mention maybe liquidity issues that happen, that when you have a portfolio of like tens of billions of dollars of Bitcoin and you want to go hedge against that, it's not as easy anymore. You're right. It's not as simple. And so I think for all these treasury companies that are looking to get billions or tens of billions or eventually hundreds of billions of dollars in crypto and build these over decades of time, I think it makes sense that we have something that is a bit more structured, something that's a bit more complex, and something that works for them. Because very rarely do we see these large billion, trillion dollar asset managers and institutions do the same kind of trading strategies that retail traders do. So right. Why should they have to hedge risk in the same way that retail does?
Right. Yeah, exactly. And to that end, Brendan, I mean, this is a very institutional type product. Like I said, it's traditional finance type stuff, structured products. But, you know, bringing it to this arena, I think the timing's awesome because, you know, to your point, guys, I mean, so many people are getting into this, you know, DAT model. So I think the key to most of these guys is how do you differentiate? And how do you cannibalize the other treasuries? Because at some point there's going to be, you know, there's going to be a big kind of buyout, mergers, all that kind of stuff of these guys. So there will definitely be a consolidation play coming down the pipe. But to differentiate yourself from all of them who are, like I said, seeking alpha, and to be the safest of all of them, or certainly regarded as the safest, I think, like I said, I think it opens the door to people like my dad as an example, you know, old guy. You know, think guys who, you know, they want to be part of this, but they don't have the time, Brendan, to go out and buy OTC options. They don't want to do that. They want somebody to do that for them. And that's where I think the corporate crypto treasury strategy works, is it's a great way for people to get involved in the asset. And also it's a great way for people to hedge. And if we can offer that as one product, or not us, but if we could be, you know, if we could service those guys who want to do this, then I think it, you know, it really makes sense. So,
yeah, I think you're totally spot on. And I liked what you kind of said about, you know, finding the differentiators between all of these different digital asset treasury companies. And we spoke with the head of trading at Galaxy recently, a gentleman named Jason Urban, and he pointed this out. He's like, people are underestimating how much volume is going to come from just arbitragers going back and forth between Bitmine Immersion and, you know, SBET. Or, you know, MicroStrategy and Metaplanet, right? Because at the end of the day, people are trading, you know, the Bitcoin per share, and they're trading the Bitcoin premium to NAV. And there's a couple little things that they're trading. So, like, there's a whole new class of metrics and really a whole new asset class that people are now coming into, and volatility arbitrages are coming in. So there's going to be, I mean, I see, you know, Bitmine and MicroStrategy are some of the most actively traded stocks on the stock exchange. And so they're going to need to differentiate themselves as more and more come online. And that puts you guys in just such a sweetheart position in the market, you know, to develop more structured credit, to develop more and more products for Ethereum or Solana or Bitcoin. And so I guess I wanted to get a little bit of your temperature on, you know, what are you building towards? You know, you're going to be a services company to these DATs. Are there other structured credit products that you're starting to get really excited about? Or how are you thinking about this?
So I can't tell you too much because we're a public company, but I can definitely say that, look, we're very excited about, you know, where this is headed. We are agnostic in the sense that it doesn't have to just be Bitcoin. We can do Ethereum. We could do a Solana, anything out there through this structure. Bitcoin just, you know, it's an easy one to start with. But, you know, we are contemplating at some point, you know, when we're live and the product's being used, which we think is going to be very shortly. You know, we have a few other ideas that will come, you know, come down the transom or across the transom, sorry. And I think, you know, to be quite frank, you know, somebody like Goldman or JP Morgan is going to rip us off at some point. So, you know, that always happens, but, you know, we have at least a 1 year head start, and we just know from the legalese, all that other kind of stuff that, you know, we are first mover advantage guys. And, you know, so we have a year to do it, but you're right, Bryce. We can't just stop here. We have to keep going. So we know that our credit product right now is being evaluated by insurers. So that credit product will eventually start moving as well. And we have, like I said, a few other ideas that as soon as this gets going, they're going to follow on suit. So, you know, once again, it just gets to the point, like, you know, once again, Wall Street hasn't been developing anything new for years. And so it gives a little small, you know, kind of companies like ours, the ability to innovate and, you know, disrupt and offer better alternatives. So,
you know, when it comes to treasuries, I think they're really interesting because it shows that not only does retail like truly believe in this for the long term, it's showing that the institutional side is starting to really turn over a new page and say, hey, we believe in this in the long term as well, which is exactly what these treasury companies are. But I've seen some people speculate that with the influx that we've seen of treasury companies, some people are speculating that maybe that will be the catalyst of the next crash, or that that could cause like the next FTX-like moment. And I think that from their perspective, they're looking at all these new treasuries coming up and saying, well, eventually they're going to try to become more and more risk on, right? Mm-hmm. Because they're going to try to outperform their competitors. And while I don't think a company like Strategy or Bitmine or some of those, I'm not really as nervous about those. I think most people are nervous about the new ones that come up and they're going to say, well, we can get better returns and this and that. And maybe they start integrating forms of leverage. And then that eventually leads to an unsustainable path, kind of like what we saw in the DeFi boom of 2021, where you saw people saying, hey, I'm going to give 5% on my stablecoin. And then someone else said, I'm going to give 10% on my stablecoin. Then we saw 15%, then 20%, then 25%. And then eventually we're like, what in the world's going on? 25% on a stablecoin. And then it all blew up because they're all trying to outperform each other. So
good times.
I know it's a big statement, but do you think that the treasury, you know, boom, let's call it, the treasury explosion that we're seeing with all these companies come up, do you think it's even possible for them to lead to a blow up moment like that? And does a product like yours help avoid that by mitigating risk?
Yeah. So there's a few questions in there. So yeah, I think Brendan, I think there's a lot of leverage in the system from what we've seen, just by talking with people who are, you know, in the space. And the leverage is definitely building. To that end,
is that a good thing?
Is that a good thing? It depends who you ask.
Because depends whose hands
because,
it's in.
Yeah. Because okay, you have all these guys coming on stream. They're all launching these treasuries. At some point, you know, it's going to be a crowded room. Some might argue it's already there. I don't know. I think all these guys coming out buying crypto, I think it's underlying, very supportive because it's really basically they're hogging the supply. So, you know, and less supply out there, the tighter that, you know, that demand's going to get, and you're going to end up with much, much higher prices in any kind of scenario like that. Now you will have blowups. You will have bad actors like FTXs out there, who unfortunately they paint the whole thing with a bad brush. And it's still a very nascent industry. It's only like what, like, I guess, maybe 15, 16 years old. I mean, you know, it's not that old. So in any nascent kind of industry like this, you're going to have hiccups, but the underlying fundamentals are strong. But to that end, funny, I was talking to a hedge fund the other day. Get this, guys, you're going to love this. So the hedge fund, I was telling him about our product, and I can't say who, but But I said, look, you know, this is a way for you guys to hedge because you guys are buying, you know, some of these crypto treasury companies, or, you know, you're putting money to, you know, putting money to work here. And he sat back and he's just like, well, he said, I don't need to worry about the crypto treasury because I've already hedged myself. So this is the guy putting up the capital for the treasury. He doesn't care about the company treasury as far as them hedging. So he doesn't really care about the retail investors or anybody else in the play. He's sitting there smug as a bug thinking like, I'm so smart because I hedged myself. But what's unfortunate about that, other than him being a real sleaze, is the fact that this guy is using OTC options to hedge his risk and to offset his risk. He has no idea who his counterparty is and whether their books are clean. And I can definitely say this, that there's a lot of talk. And once again, I'm not a full expert in this, but there's a lot of talk right now in the hedge fund community about the excess amount of leverage that's been building up behind this. So let's face it, if you have something bad happen, you need to know that you're you know, basically you're going to get paid. You know, the protection you bought is going to come through to you. And that's where our product makes a difference, because all of that money. So if you hedge this thing at, let's say, you know, at $85, let's assume BTC is at 100,000. You're going to, you know, your hedge kicks in at 85,000. Well, if BTC goes down to, let's say, 50,000, you need to know that that 35,000 is going to be there for you when that time comes and you call that option. With us, like I said, the seller of that protection has taken that 35 million already and is sitting in a treasury bill at US Bank. It doesn't move. So your collateral is always there. You're guaranteed to get paid when a bad moment happens. OTC options, other types of strategies like that, I don't think they offer the same thing. And like I said, that was the weakness we identified in credit default swaps as well back in the day, is you were dealing with a lot of counterparty risk. You know, and especially, I mean, you go back to 2007. I mean, my goodness. I mean, you couldn't ask for a bigger disaster happening, but, you know, everyone facilitated it. And then you had Volcker and Dodd-Frank come in, which, you know, kind of cleaned the deck, so to speak. But you had a market that never really came back. Because once again, everyone remembered how badly burned they got because AIG was writing protection and they had no collateral behind it. So we think the same thing about crypto. And for some of these, you know, crypto treasuries, is the fact that, you know, if they have a fully collateralized, transparent instrument and hedge, which gives their investors and them the assurance of getting paid in a bad market, then I think we're winning, you know? So,
yeah, I think you're totally right. And it's interesting because, you know, Brennan, to your point about like, can this really collapse the ecosystem? And, you know, everybody's got their micro strategy, and Michael Saylor with a target on his back, he's become the main character, everybody's saying. And, you know, any leverage that starts, you know, at some point, you know, gets unwound. And, you know, he's always on CNBC kind of defending his position and saying they've got this bulletproof balance sheet where they've got, you know, I don't know, call it $80 billion worth of Bitcoin. And they've got, you know, $10 billion worth of debt extended against that. And most of that is in these perpetual strike preferred things that essentially he's basically like, I can't get margin called. Like, I've structured my credit in such a way that I just can't get margin called. And so MicroStrategy, in a sense, might be a little bit of a unicorn in the sense that they were first to market. They created the whole financial engineering of Bitcoin. They've become like the first Bitcoin bank, essentially, where they've got Bitcoin and assets. They've got Bitcoin denominated loans and all this kind of stuff. And then, you know, they kind of do some software development on the side. But, you know, the jury's still out to see if, you know, everybody else could kind of have that same immaculate conception story and if they do it as well. But it seems like, And I want to get your thoughts on this just in terms of volatility over time for Bitcoin. Is it going to go down or go up? Because it seems like we just have a lot of sellers of volatility, like MicroStrategy and everybody, you know, selling the MicroStrategy options and all this kind of stuff. And one of Bitcoin's like key things that people were really attracted to is like trading its volatility. But now that it's probably going to be on a trajectory of lowering over time, do people need to get their yayas out with their volatility out in the altcoin world? And could it be a rise of all this volatility in altcoins now?
You're asking me?
Yeah, I'm asking you. I'm asking you. Yeah, like, okay. Do you think Bitcoin's volatility will go down or rise over time? And
oh man, you look, know. I mean, our view on it that we take as a company is that
yeah.
You've got 3 to 7 million Bitcoin are lost. Okay. I'm mm-hmm. I lost a bunch of Bitcoin ones. These little hard wallets, and I'm just like, yeah, I'm beside myself how I could have lost those things. But you know, at the time it was like $400 a coin kind of thing. It was no big deal, but it's a lot different now. But you know, when you look at the drivers, so you have 3 to 7 million wallets gone or Bitcoin gone. You have maybe about 1 million to still be mined. So you now have, you know, ETFs, you have corporate crypto treasuries or DATs, you know, everyone's buying this cryptocurrency up. So you're actually ending up with a lot less supply. And is the demand going to go down or is it going to increase? I would wager that it's going to probably increase. So you're going to have more and more participants play, especially when products like ours kind of come out, and it brings out, you know, a whole new investor, somebody who's more, once again, more conservative, more focused on, you know, preserving that capital and giving away a little bit of their upside, you know, in return for that. But I think you're going to have more demand, less supply. And I think you're going to end up with an asset that, I mean, I think when you talk about volatility, it might not be as volatile on the downside as it has been in some cases in the past. But I think on the upside, I think it could be incredibly volatile. You know, I mean, people throw around huge numbers like 300,000, 1 million. I mean, gosh, it wouldn't surprise me, put it that way. That comes. But as far as the lack of volatility, that's not necessarily a bad thing. You know, that's actually probably a really good thing, because longer term, if you're going to treat it as a Michael Saylor preservation of capital type asset or investment, I don't really know how he views it, but, you know, you want less volatility over time. It strengthens the whole ecosystem for sure.
I think the rise of all these different DATs has also been something that stuck out to me, right? Because, you know, originally it was just Michael Saylor. Then we started seeing some for ETH, and I think that makes sense, right? You look at Bitcoin as the king. ETH builds a lot of the infrastructure that Bitcoin really can't do. And then we started seeing Solana, which again, I think makes a little bit more sense. It's a big infrastructure play. A lot can be built on top of it. It can do things differently and sometimes better than Ethereum. And so there's caveats, there's pros and cons of both. And then, you know, in recent months, we've started seeing treasuries of all these different altcoins, some meme coins, some projects that have no revenue, you know, maybe not even a product yet, some that do. And they're altcoins that do have a product and a service and maybe some revenue and stuff. But it seems like now we're getting into the point where there's just a race to be the first one to do a treasury for something. And I'm not sure how I feel about that. You know, I think correct me if I'm wrong here, but I feel like not every company needs a treasury, if that makes sense.
Or not every crypto needs a treasury company.
Not every crypto needs a treasury company.
Yeah.
But I'm sure for you, Patrick, I'm sure that's a great thing. You're probably seeing all of them and saying, hey, come our way. We can help out.
I mean,
or I guess that's even a better point.
I mean,
offer your kind of products to treasury companies that do all these different altcoins?
Yeah. So I think you have a lot of new companies coming out. You have, you know, once again, a real rush into the room, so to speak. I think part of the reason for that is you got a lot of lousy companies. Like if you looked at, what was that one, that the Ethereum one, I already mentioned them.
SBET.
SharpLink.
SharpLink.
I mean, for all intents and purposes, I mean, the thing was a flop, right? I mean, it was a nothing.
Yeah, it was a dead company.
It was dead. So there's a lot of interest for, you know, boards of small little blown up companies to do something like the treasury. And there's still quite a bit of funding for that. I mean, you know, there's so much money being thrown at this right now because it's the hottest thing and everybody loves that. But I think you do end up with a crowded field at some point. And that's like when I said consolidation, I think starts to kick in. Do people start doing that when the MNAV actually comes down to one, or, you know, basically, you know, to a flat line with the underlying asset? I think that's when you're going to see that consolidation play kind of kick in. And we seem to be getting close to that. I mean, you look at prices of these treasuries over the last little while. I mean, they're just getting kiboshed, like completely KO'd. So, you know, that's a good time for a consolidation play to come in. And I think that's what's probably going to happen. And I think, you know, all the glamour, all the fun stuff around the altcoins, et cetera, you know, I don't know enough about it to even comment on that. But it seems like it's a lot of crazy going on. But that's not a bad thing. I mean, you know, hey, man, the system needs to be shaken up a bit, and you need to have new entrants come into play. And so I think, you know, that's might not be a bad thing.
Yeah, we're getting an ever expanding universe of new buyers and new pools of capital. You know, we think, you know, me and Brandon, we've been locked away here in our crypto world for years and years. But we realize that 99% of money out there, you know, they need equities or structured products and you know, bonds. They can't actually go and buy and hold, you know, crypto as a, you know, a commodity and all these
kind
of things.
That's a great point, man. Yeah, that's a really good point. Yeah.
Yeah.
No one wants to go into, you know, set up a wallet and all that kind of stuff. Most people don't have the time and patience to worry about keys and all this other stuff. So yeah, there is like a big, big market of people who want to be involved. They think that the crypto, you know, treasury strategy is the one to go with over exchange traded funds and all that other kind of stuff.
And I want to kind of just round out the conversation with a little bit of your experience, kind of going back to 2007, 2008, because you were kind of right in the thick of, like you said, just, you know, great financial crisis and really understanding from the sales side what was going on. And I just want to get like, you know, what are your signs that you're looking for if there's going to be a crash? I mean, maybe not to the same scale, but are there, you know, everybody's talking about those sentiment reads. You watch The Big Short and, you know, like Steve Carell goes, he realizes all these different conversations. He has that aha moment. Right. Are there any sort of aha moments that you could kind of bring to our listeners?
I would say in this world right now, narrative plays everything on this. So I'm reading a book right now called Narrative Economics. And it's how the narrative actually can dictate what really kind of happens, you know, under the covers, so to speak, and with the economy, with companies, with segments like crypto. So I would always pay attention to the narrative. And if the narrative gets too buoyant, then, you know, there's going to be, you know, somebody's going to get kicked in the pants. whereas if it gets too depressing, and, you know, everyone's just throwing out their crypto like, yeah, this was a failed experiment, then you know that you're at the bottom. So,
yeah,
I mean, that's from my experience. That's all I can really share about that. But, you know, my biggest thing and the only reason why I harp on 2007, because I think it's relevant to the product that we've created. And that is that, hey, man, you know, AIG, Lehman, a bunch of other guys were writing protection and they had no collateral to support it. So that's why everyone got so basically just slammed. And so I think if you have full collateralization and transparency, and once again, the assurance that you're going to be protected, that money's there for you, then like I said, I think, you know, we're on the right path. So,
yeah. And kind of last question is just in terms of like, where can this market go? You know, are you feeling like it's part of the top of the 4-year cycle? I know a lot of people think the 4-year halving cycle is going to dictate prices. Or do you think that this bull market can extend through next year?
I think it could do either or, man.
There you go.
Come on, man.
Just got to be hedged.
If I had a crystal ball, man, I wouldn't be here.
That's for sure.
Actually, I would be still chatting with you guys. You guys are great guys. and anyone who makes time for me, I mean, you know, God bless you guys. But no, I would say really. Yeah, I mean, from our view, we think it's going to do very, very well. We think there's going to be, obviously, like I said, MNAVs are coming down. They're being compressed. That's a really, really good thing, because when they come to basically, you know, an equalization level, even if they get to a discount level, you're going to have a cleaning of the deck, so to speak. But the underlying asset, like Bitcoin, Ethereum, Solana, they're probably going to do great. In fact, I think they're going to do beyond great. I think they're ready for probably one of the greatest bull markets they've ever had. So that's my opinion. But
clip it.
But you know, at the same time, I mean, if I was wrong, but if I was going to build my own Bitcoin treasury right now, I sure as heck would give up a little bit of upside in return for the peace of mind that, you know, hey, if I'm wrong, I'm not going to get too hurt. And I'll look like a superstar, by the way, if and when that event happens, everyone's going to want to pile into my thing, because they're going to say, this guy was the smartest guy out there. He had a hedge. Nobody else did. And so then you end up cannibalizing everybody.
I love it.
Yeah.
Patrick, thank you so much for coming on to the show. CEO of DelphX. We hope to have you on again soon as there's more developments and more exciting shakeups in the DAT world, and any new products and services that you launch. We'd love to hear about them first. But until then, thank you for joining, and everybody at home listening, we hope you enjoyed as well.
Thanks, guys. Really appreciate it. Pleasure talking with you. Thanks for having me.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.